This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
I'm going to try starting out being controversial today. Happy holidays! This time of year, we always look back and listen again to some stories about interesting people we met during the year. But this year, the most interesting person we met has been gone for decades, but her pictures live on in a fascinating history project from the University of Michigan. They studied two unique aspects of American life just before and after the end of the 19th century: African-American life in the Albany, New York area after the end of slavery, and the photograph. Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll listen again to the history professor whose class studied the photo albums of Arabella Chapman and preserved them online for all to see. We'll also spend an academic minute looking at the dark side of mistletoe. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. If you're the director of a major university's library and you come across two wonderfully preserved photo albums from the early 20th century, well, that's pretty much Christmas morning and your birthday all rolled into one. That actually happened at the William L. Clemens Library at the University of Michigan. The original owner of the albums was Arabella Chapman, an African-American woman from Albany, New York, and the pictures documented the lives of her and her family from the late 1800s to the early 20th century. That's where Martha Jones comes in. Martha is a professor of history, Afro-American, and African studies at the University of Michigan. She and her students researched and preserved those pictures in the Arabella Chapman Project. I spoke with Professor Jones about the project this past spring and started with the obvious question: who is Arabella Chapman?
Arabella Chapman was a young African-American woman born and raised in Albany, New York. She lived between 1859 and 1927, and we know her best because she left to us two remarkable photograph albums, images of Arabella herself, her family, and her friends.
And where were these photo albums found?
It's a little bit of a mystery, but what we know is that some years ago, the director of the Clemens Library, which is our special collections library at the University of Michigan, purchased them from a dealer in New York. Beyond that, we don't know how they finally came to be in Ann Arbor, but we're really glad that they're there.
And the photographs are, well, they're really remarkable in how well-preserved they are. And from what I see, there are three different types of photographs that were preserved in this album. Can you tell us the difference between the three?
Sure. There are three kinds of photographs, and they help us recall the history of photography. The first type is the tintype. The tintype is an early photographic technique that involves the very labor-intensive mixing of chemicals, the impressment of a unique image on a metal plate. It took a long time to produce, and there are many tintypes of the Chapman family in the albums. The next type is the carte de visite, a very popular, widely circulating paper process that becomes very dominant in the Civil War era and really gives us our most vivid memories of photography in the 19th century come from the carte de visite because they were inexpensive, they were easy to reproduce, people used them for their own family keepsakes and memories, but many popular and famous people in the 19th century are also captured on carte de visite. Arabella has Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, and John Brown among the photographs in her collection. The last bit are what we think of today as the snapshot. At the end of the 19th century, Kodak develops a technology that permits for the first time ordinary Americans to take their own photographs in casual settings, outdoors, during moments of leisure. No longer do Americans have to go to the photo studio to be photographed. They can take their photographs at home. And we have just a few of those snapshots also in the albums.
When you became aware of these photo albums, what did you want to do with them? What did you want to study and learn from them?
Well, first and foremost, I think I wanted to know who was Arabella Chapman and how did she come to assemble this extraordinary array of images. Beyond that, I think we wanted to use the albums to look into a story of the African-American past that is not very often told. It's a story about the years after the Civil War, after the abolition of slavery. It's a story about spaces like Albany, but also Saratoga Springs and Berkshire County in Massachusetts, where there was a very vibrant African-American community that grew up around working in the resorts, in the spas, in the region. So we wanted to tell the story of this unique place that is Albany, the capital region, but also Saratoga Springs and the Berkshires. I think we also wanted to think about the photographs itself, and particularly with young people whose relationship to the photographic portrait is the selfie. We wanted to think in new ways about the history of the selfie. And by revisiting these old images, we were able to rethink the way in which the portrait has become so ubiquitous today.
You started a project with students to study these photographs. What types of students came aboard for this project, and what they end up doing?
I asked students to join me as part of a course I was teaching on African-American women's history. Arabella Chapman fits beautifully into our narrative of African-American history, this young woman born on the eve of the Civil War and the first generation in the years after the emancipation of slavery. She's a wonderful example of that story. So, truth be told, I coerced my students gently and told them that rather than have examinations in the semester, they would get to participate in a research project and produce new work. I think it's true to say some of my students were skeptical. They didn't have a lot of experience with historical research. Many of them had never been to a special collections library. We took them to the Clements Library. We introduced them to the albums. We let them hold the albums, touch the albums, up close, appreciate these images. And I can say in a class of more than 30 students, each and every one of them was on board to do the research.
Most of these photographs are just portraits of a single person. How could you learn about the era from just those photographs?
That's a great question. The photographs aren't enough alone, of course, even though they include very intriguing clues on what people wear, the settings in which they're photographed, handwritten captions with names and the like. So we had some clues in the albums, but we also had to employ good old-fashioned social history techniques in order to fill out the story. What does that mean? Social history techniques meant that students spent time in U.S. Census records, looking back at each 10-year census in the 19th century that enumerates people by name, their age, their race, the composition of their family. We used city directories, which were sort of like 19th century phone books before there was a telephone. But each year in Albany and cities like Albany, a commercial company would produce a directory of all the households, and we could learn people's names again, where they lived, sometimes where they worked. And then we spent time in the newspapers. There's no substitute for today the kind of research we can do in newspapers, many of which have been digitized and are available to us as researchers. And so we learned a lot about the people in the album by way of newspapers.
The photographs have been now digitally preserved. They're all online. Anyone can see. What types of techniques were used to preserve and get as much information as you could out of each photograph?
Yeah. One of the really remarkable moments in this project was the day that the Clements Library disassembled these albums. We believed, or I should say perhaps we hoped, that if we disassembled the albums, if we were able to see the backs of the photographs, for example, we would earn more clues. And we did. Handwritten notes, stamps from photo studios were some of the things we discovered when we looked behind the images. So our work involved documenting the album and documenting what is likely the only time in the life of this album that it will be disassembled. This, of course, required expert hands, and the conservator at the Clements Library played the main role while we helped with photographing and otherwise documenting the process. Now the albums live at the library as they long have under climate-controlled conditions. They are preserved in a custom-made boxes that keep them intact and safe. When you handle them, you appreciate how fragile they are. Their age is apparent, but they've survived very, very well. And that's part of the remarkable story of the Chapman albums, is that they have survived intact as photograph albums. It's not unusual to encounter individual images of African Americans, photographic images from this period, but most frequently they've been disaggregated from albums. If they, in fact, started their lives in albums, they have now been taken out of the albums and circulated individually as images. So part of the important work was to keep this album intact, because in part we could tell the story of Arabella, her family, and her community, because the pictures were all together. We knew they had a relationship to one another. Our work was to figure out what those relationships were.
Still to come, when our conversation with Professor Martha Jones continues, we'll talk about some of the pictures of famous historical figures that were included in the albums. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Professor Martha Jones, a professor of history, Afro-American, and African studies at the University of Michigan. We're talking about the Arabella Chapman Project, the study of two photo albums filled with pictures of an African-American family from Albany, New York, at the end of the 19th century.
Earlier, you spoke about some of the photographs in there that were of famous people, Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass. Now, these, you said they're mass-produced photographs. That's nothing that the family actually took, were they?
No. In fact, no. I can say that two of them, the image of Abraham Lincoln and the image of John Brown, are images that were known to us and that circulated widely. We could find copies of them, if you will, in other archives around the country today. One of the intriguing mysteries of the album is the image of Frederick Douglass. Thus far in our research, it appears it is the only one of this particular portrait of Frederick Douglass that survives today. Were there others? Perhaps, and perhaps they've been lost. Where was Douglass photographed in this particular image? We don't know. There's no stamp on the back of it. But because there is a team of researchers at Harvard University today putting together a portfolio of all of the existing images of Frederick Douglass, we were able to compare this one to their archive and learn that, in fact, it's unique. So how it came to be there and why it's a unique image, well, that's one of the mysteries of the album. But we know that we do, in fact, have an image of Frederick Douglass that we can't find anywhere else.
Were you able to get in touch with members of the family and talk about some of these people?
We have not yet had the opportunity to meet anyone from the Chapman family, though we are eager to, and we really appreciate you having us on this program and helping us introduce this project to everyone, but in particular listeners in the Albany region. We do know that the Chapman family and the Miller family, when Arabella is married, she becomes Arabella Chapman Miller. We know that that family continues to live in the Albany area for quite a few generations after Arabella, but we have yet to find her descendants. We'd love to have an opportunity to learn more about this family, learn more about her legacy. There's no question that when we look at these albums and we see the kinds of photographs that this family made sure were taken. We know that family was very, very important to them, and it would be only fitting if we could share much of what we found with descendants of the Chapmans.
There is one photograph I came upon in the album that has a piece of lost Albany history there. It was the picture taken at Pleasure Island, which was an amusement park, which we kind of maybe sort of know where it was, but nothing from that park actually remains. That was very interesting.
Yeah, it's a wonderful shot because it's one of the more casual pictures. Our curator, Clayton Lewis, suspects that it was likely a photo that was taken at Pleasure Island. It would have not been unusual at the end of the 19th century for an amusement park to have a tintype photographer who was set up to capture families who were out enjoying the park for the day. In that picture is Arabella herself, alongside her sister, Harriet Alfarata, and Arabella's three children sitting at their feet. Her daughter, Clarabelle, her second daughter, also Harriet Alfarata, and her son, Carol Albin. It's a wonderful image.
When all was said and done, what were some of the reactions from the students? What did they get out of this?
Our students have written a series of blog posts, and I recommend them to your listeners if they'd like to learn more about how our students reacted to this. Our blog post yesterday was from Siobhan Taylor, who explains that when she first approached this project, she approached it like any research project. That is to say, she had a job to do, and she thought she should be scientific and objective and do the work of helping to document the album. But as she spent time with them, she began to, I guess we'd say, to imagine, to begin to try and put herself in Arabella's shoes and to try and, from the photos, from the history around the photos, begin to imagine what life was like for a woman like Arabella. At the end, Siobhan concludes that this project for her was really a tribute to Arabella's legacy and, in a sense, an act of justice. That is to say, to take these albums out of the wonderful but very cloistered space of the Clements Library Archive and bring them out into the light and to show us the extraordinary pride and sense of family and community that really were at the core of Arabella's life. Siobhan called it an act of justice, and I think that's very apt.
Well, finally, let me turn it around. When you went into this project, did you think it would be what it eventually turned out to be?
That's a great question. The wonderful thing about research is that it's always something other than what you thought it would be, which is to say, I didn't quite know where it would end up. And my students told me that they thought all along I had in my office a secret book, and that at the end of the work, I would bring the book out and tell them all the answers. And I had to say to them, no. That's not how it works. We actually go into a project like this knowing very little. It's why we do it. And we believe in the process. We believe in the historical method so that we're confident with the sources and some hard work, we can unravel the stories behind these images. What I think I didn't completely expect was the ways in which this brought out in our students new thinking about photography. I mentioned the selfie, and it was a wonderful opportunity to rethink the ubiquitousness of the self-portrait in our lives today. But it also encouraged students to remember that in their own homes, even today, there are photographic albums, that, in fact, many of them have been introduced to those albums by elders, grandparents, and parents who have sat with them and looked through and told the family story through these keepsakes. And so in this way, while Arabella Chapman's story seems remote to us, she died in 1927, it's also true that the purpose of the albums, their ability to tell a story, to permit us to craft our own stories, our own images, whatever it is that the world might be saying about us, for particularly young African Americans, this is a very powerful lesson. I don't think I anticipated all of that when we began, but I'm really glad that we got to that place before it was done.
Dr. Martha Jones is a professor of history, Afro-American, and African studies at the University of Michigan. If you'd like to see all of the photographs and read about the research project, or if you think you or someone you know may be related to Arabella Chapman, go to arabellachapman.com. Sneak in a smooch under the mistletoe, some good holiday fun, but that little green sprig may have evil intentions. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Sure, you can kiss under the mistletoe, but just don't eat it. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Today on the Academic Minute, Elizabeth Skippington, postdoc in Indiana University's Department of Biology, profiles the poisonous side of the traditional holiday decoration.
The iconic Christmas decoration, mistletoe, is actually a parasite that attaches itself to other plants, stealing its host food and water. And while often associated with winter, species of mistletoes can be found all over the world, even, for example, amid the harsh arid conditions of the Australian outback. We have recently found a species of mistletoe, Viscum scuroloideum, that curiously lacks several genes found in all other plants and animals. The genes have been lost from the mistletoe's mitochondria, a separate compartment within cells that converts food into energy, a process known as cellular respiration. Mitochondria has their own DNA due to their history as a bacteria ingested billions of years ago by cells that ultimately evolved into multicellular life forms. Because the mitochondria of complex organisms must fulfill their primary function of powering cells, the genes that provide the blueprint for cellular respiration have remained present over time. The loss of these genes, as discovered in Viscum, has never been seen before and adds to an already long list of wonderfully bizarre features of plant mitochondrial genomes. For reasons we can only guess right now, this mistletoe can survive and thrive without these genes. Some aspect of the mistletoe's unusual lifestyle as a thief of water and nutrients from its host may allow it to take a detour from the usual path of energy production in cells. With about 1,500 diverse varieties of mistletoe worldwide, it's important that we continue to explore the mitochondria of these fascinating plants. Gene losses that are fatal in other plants may be tolerated by these parasites due to their unusual lifestyles. How this happens could reveal patterns of plant evolution yet to be uncovered and provide clues about how parasitic plants specifically adapt to different hosts and lifestyles.
That was Elizabeth Skippington of Indiana University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to the Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or any of the other National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.